Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Saints battling the Seahawks in Seattle on Sunday. You can start your game day at 11 o'clock with Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and the Caesars Sportsbook First Take. Then at 1 o'clock, join Bobby Hebert, Steve Geller for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. They'll break down the matchup, 3:05 kickoff. Turn down the sound on the TV, turn up Deuce and Haas and Jeff Nowak on the sideline. Then, after the game, sound off with the Cajun Cannon on the point after. If you love football, we got 10 hours of it. Wall-to-wall black and gold coming your way, Saints Seahawks Sunday on WWL, live on the free Odyssey app. And sometimes if you listen to Deuce, I call him Deustradamus because he can predict what's going to happen before it does. Mike Dettelier joins us now to break down the game. How you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. Tell me. Thank you.
Well, I got the depth charts open. Let's talk about Seattle offense and Saints defense.
Seattle wants to run the football. And you can see just out of the makeup and Clint Kubiak, who was formerly with the Saints last year as their offensive coordinator, runs the offense. And so you know they're going to run it, and you're going to get a fistful of Kenneth Walker. Charbonnet's sort of beat up a little bit right now. I think he's dealing with a foot or ankle injury. But So you're going to get a lot of Kenneth Walker. That's how they set the tone of trying to run the football with Walker. And I look at their receivers, and they sort of both do the same thing. You talk about the veteran and Cooper Kupp. For so many years, we watched him with the Rams. The most explosive guy certainly is Jackson Smith, Najigma, former Ohio State receiver. Man, he's one of the best route runners in the game. He's not this super speedy guy, but his ability to get open downfield is really good. So him and Cooper Kupp, I think, have a good combination. The problem has been, what I see, is their offensive line has been a little erratic. And with the new quarterback in Sam Darnold, who's not the most mobile guy around, he likes to kind of stay in put and throw from the pocket. So can the Saints get any pressure on him? That's going to be the key. But when you play Seattle and knowing what they want to run with Kubiak, they're going to want to run the football. That's first and foremost. You got to stop the run.
Ironic, he's not the most mobile, but he's done a lot of traveling, huh, Sam Darnold?
And he got paid. Man,
yeah, did he get a
paycheck? Yep. Man, he went to Minnesota, and Kevin O'Connell really did a great job with him, really kind of roughing out some of the difficult spots in his game. But, man, he's a huge guy, and he probably gave me one of the best quotes I've ever had when it comes to the Manning Passing Academy. He's at USC. And I asked him, you know, how it is here. And he was like, well, it's the first time I've ever been in South Louisiana. Man, it is so hot here. But he said, the people are the nicest people in the world. He said, I grew up in a big city out in Los Angeles. They mean there. People here are really nice. And so, man, they could have used that for a Chamber of Commerce deal with Sam Darnold. But
so
he's been a bit erratic as a passer. And you understand that early on with Seattle, but, man, he has shown at times he can be really talented.
So let's talk about the Seahawks offensive line against Saints defensive line. How you see that playing out if they want to run the ball?
That's not a strong point for them. It really hasn't. I think the Saints maybe can match up really well there. But, you know, I felt last week, you know, with the 49ers offensive line, which isn't very good. It's comparable to Seattle. The Saints got a little pressure, you know, on Mac Jones, but not a lot. Their offensive line was something they kind of gnashed their teeth about in the offseason, that they want to try to fix some of that. And they used their first-round pick for an offensive lineman, and Gray Zabel. So they tried to fix one of the areas, but they not a super physical offensive line. They really not. They more, to me, of a finesse-blocking team than they are a real physical unit up front.
So along those lines, you look at, I don't know, is Chase Young supposed to play or not?
No, Chase will not play.
All right, so you got Granderson, who's not played badly, Devon Gotshaw, you got Brian Brise, and then Cam Jordan. How do you like the Saints' chances of stopping a run, plus the linebackers, of course, you can't ignore them, but the chances of Saints stopping a run, if that's what Clint Kubiak and Seahawks intend to do?
That is going to be the key here for the Saints defensively, stopping the run. My thing is, hey, if Sam Darnold beats me throwing it, but I'm not going to let you run the football and Kenneth Walker have 28 carries for 150 yards. I can't not have that happen in this football game. I've got to be able to stop them early, and I think that's going to be the game plan, because we saw even in game one against the 49ers, and, man, that was a really tough game for Seattle. 49ers won that game at the end, but Seattle did everything to win it but win it. Mm-hmm. You know, the score says San Francisco won, so that's all that counted.
But it was the Bosa strip, right?
Well, it was not a great game for them offensively, and they didn't do, I think, what a Kubiak team wants to do, and that's control things up front along the offensive line. So for the Saints, they got to be able to stop the run, and that starts with one guy, Kenneth Walker.
Comes the wideouts with Cooper Kupp and Njigba, and lining up against Alante Taylor, Kool-Aid McKinstry. How is that playing out?
Short stuff. I think Darnold's going to want to get the football out fast.
And along those lines, that brings me to A.J. Barner, the tight end. Sometimes, man, we don't hear about these tight ends until they show up big on game day against the Saints.
Well, that they do each and every week. But they've got a young rookie, Elijah Arora, from Miami of Florida. It was a second-round pick for them this year, who they think is going to be something special one day. Mm-hmm. And so that you may see something there. He's number 18, mm-hmm. and you can spot him out on the field real quickly. But Elijah's a guy that I think they want to get more involved in the offense. Now, he's not a great blocker, but he's stretching the imagination, which is why he's not starting. Mm-hmm. He's much more of a pass receiver. But he's a 6'5.5", 245-pound guy downfield that's going to give teams a lot of trouble. Once he gets it in the NFL, he's going to be a good pain in the yuck-to-be to anybody that got to cover him.
You don't want that to happen ever. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll talk about Seattle defense against Saints offense. Mike Dettillier breaking it down for us. Saints getting ready to take on Seattle on Sunday. In Seattle, we got all the action for you here on WWL. Traffic now at 8:20. 8:27 Friday morning, WWL, Tommy Tucker with Mike Dettillier. That's when we break it down and look at the depth charts and go player to player. We're now talking about the Seattle defense against the Saints offense. Mike, what's the, as you say, straw that stirs the drink on a Seattle defense?
What they got up front, their defensive line. Mm-hmm. Leonard Williams, number 99, who's played both defensive tackle and end, former USC guy, was one of the early round picks a few years back. Man, he's a big man, very good athlete, and he can run the field extremely well. So you better put a hat on him. But the guy that really has played extremely well this year is their nose tackle, number 91, Byron Murphy II, University of Texas, first-round pick in 2024. He's barely 6 foot tall and about 315 pounds. But, man, he is as quick as you will see coming off the snap.
Calvin Banks would have gone against him.
Oh, I'm sure in practice they have.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At times, but Byron's been more of an interior. I mean, he's an inside guy, So Banks won't be blocking him. He'll be saddled up over one of the guards, most likely. And then they got a couple veterans after that. DeMarcus Lawrence, who we all remember from his days with the Cowboys, and Jerron Reed, who's sort of bounced around a little bit. But, boy, he's found a good niche, former University of Alabama defensive tackle with Seattle. That is their strength. That's the strength of this football team. Can you block those guys up front? Because, man, they come after you. They get a lot of penetration. They're fast off the snap. And Mike McDonald, their head coach, he comes from Baltimore with the Ravens. That's what this defense in a lot of ways looks like. When they're healthy all across the board, they look a lot like the Ravens defense.
So where do the Saints offensively find the weakness and exploit it?
Oh, it's in the secondary because of the injuries. Their best player on the team is Devin Witherspoon. But Spoon has been nursing a knee injury for a couple weeks. I don't think he'll play against the Saints, so you won't have to go up against him. But Josh Jobe, their starting left corner, is hurt. Julian Love, their starting strong safety, is hurt. Nick Emmanuori, their second-round pick from South Carolina, who's the backup to Love, he's hurt. So if you got time, I think you can go after this secondary. The problem is finding time because you got to block those guys up front. Now the Saints won't have Dylan Raidens. Taliese Fuaga got a back and a knee injury. So you're going to have some jumbling up front across the offensive line going up against, Tommy, I think a really good Seattle defensive line. That's the issue. Because if you were, if you healthy up front, yeah, you can go after them. People say, just throw it. You can't throw it if you're horizontal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to keep Spencer Rattler upright in this game because Seattle's going to go after him. And just think, Kubiak knows a lot about Spencer. He was here a year ago. So there's a little intel there that he can pass along to the Seahawks defensive coaches.
General rule of thumb, when you're looking at a Saints offensive lineman and then you're looking at your phone saying, who's number 79? Yeah. Where did he come from? Not a good sign. Do you think they win, Mike?
I think Seattle wins. No, it's tough to win in Seattle. Yeah. Not because of the weather. In years past, remember we talk about the weather? No, you're not going to have that type of weather in September. But, boy, it is loud.
The crowd,
And it really disrupts. Drew Brees, when we had him on, talked about it was all sort of hand signals and sort of just watch me, watch for the count. Because he said you cannot communicate verbally in that stadium. It's so loud.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you Monday. You bet, 8:30 time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Joe Geruso, got me on mute?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Tommy?
I can hear you fine, sir. How many days left in office?
116.
Yeah, I know you're counting it down. Let's talk about the whole budgeting process, and we'll go through this in the lightning round, if you will, where the dollar values are tripled, probably not when talking about budget. Let's talk about the whole budgeting process. The mayor submits a budget, the council approves it, and then that's based on an estimate of how much money the city's going to have, accurate?
That is completely right.
All right, so what happened here?
Well, there's a couple
things. Let me just take a step back, Joe. We're talking about fiscal year here and not calendar year?
Well, calendar year for the city is the same thing as fiscal year.
Okay.
We run from the beginning. It's a great question because that's not always the case, but it is January 1 through December 31st.
Gotcha.
So there's a few things that happens here that I think just kind of bear the history, which is we made the settlement with the school board in November, which we believe the administration agreed to. And then as payment is getting ready to come up for the school board settlement, there were factions inside the administration that said, well, hold on. Remember, this is the word that they use. There's a financial crisis, and we need to be very careful. Mm. And as we dug in, there was an issue of there being less revenue by an order of magnitude over $65 million.
To be clear, we're talking about 2025 here, right?
This is 2024 going into 2025. Correct?
But about the 2025 budget.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then we also said, by the way, what we're seeing right now as a result of the February 2025 report for January is there's a $40 million NOPD and other departments personnel overage. We are concerned about that. And I think, Tommy, like the most interesting thing at that point was you had two different competing things inside the administration. You had one group saying, hey, this is a huge problem and we need to be very careful. And you had another group saying, no, like this is an issue, but we're going to work our way through the issue. And this is the beginning of the year and these things have their necessary ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And Councilmember Morrell would kick me if I didn't make this point, so I will. He specifically asked, do we have to consider ourselves at DEFCON 1, where this is now such a big financial crisis, we cannot spend any money? And the administration said no to that.
So this is the administration's responsibility to determine how much revenue is coming in, accurate?
Is accurate that it's their responsibility to determine how much revenue is coming in. And here's the second point, which I know is a little esoteric, but it's the case. The council is responsible for appropriating the money, and then the administration is responsible for executing upon that appropriation. So, I mean, again, to sort of clear some air here about what's going on, if we appropriate, I'll make simple little numbers, a dollar for something, and the administration spends $1.50 on the thing that we've appropriated for, well, then they've overspent on the appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
And
wait, go through that one more time, Joe. I think that's very interesting the way you said that.
Yeah, so let's say we appropriate a dollar for something. We appropriate to a department a dollar. You can spend a dollar for your personnel costs. But if the administration spends $1.50 for the personnel costs, well, they've exceeded the appropriation, number one. And then number two, we, the council, don't learn until the back end. And this is sort of the necessary tension that goes on is, remember, the budget is something that you want to agree to with the mayor and the administration because they need to be able to go do the things. You don't want to hamstring them and blame them for not having money for police and fire.
Let me jump in. I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but as I always say, if you play golf for money, that's where most of the cheating comes in and where the money changes hands. So when it comes to a dollar for this, the mayor says we need a dollar for this, and the city council says, okay, you can have a dollar for that. The budget's approved. Then the mayor spends $1.50, or the administration spends $1.50. What does the law say about that? Who's keeping an eye on that, and at what point does it fall upon whom to fix that or deal with that deficit? Because already you've overspent your budget by 50 cents.
I would say it's a primary responsibility of the administration because you're supposed to know that you're only supposed to spend a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But here comes the next part, in fairness. But when the council is aware, then the council has to say, whoa, we're off the tracks now. What do we need to do to get back on? And look, Tommy, I realize I'm a player in this and have my own view, but when we saw all this, we specifically said we are not going to spend more general fund revenue, which is the money that's free and clear that we get from property taxes, sales taxes, licenses, fees, until we feel like we're out of the woods. So we pretty much have not approved any new position in the city of New Orleans since the beginning of the year, and have tried to limit that general fund spending that was going on. Now, I think here's the next step of all this. All right, so we start to have this discussion in January or February. In May, because we're pushing for it, and to your question of kind of making sure we're in close quarters, the administration says, here's our plan for trying to save money, what we need to do. And our expectation was that would be activated, and there would be things that would happen. And I think what we saw this week is there are certain parts of that plan that have been activated and are going to happen. And there's other parts that don't feel like they've happened yet. And so we're trying to make sure that we're all on the same page. And for those things that were $1.50, how do we control spending or sometimes even move money from one pot to another one?
Let me jump in for 1 second, Joe. So basically you're rebudgeting at this point because the mayor can't spend money that the council doesn't allocate. The money, the council has to allocate the money if the mayor overspends, and that's where you're back to almost like a de facto budget hearing?
Yeah, that's what we're back to. And
okay,
so
let me take a break and pick it up right there when we come back. 852, 8 till 9, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:57, couple of minutes left. So in the budgeting process, the mayor says, the administration says, this is what we want. The council says yes or no. The amount of money that is available is dependent upon the administration's estimates, Joe?
Yeah, it's their revenue forecast that you get, and then beginning at the year, then you start to see where the revenue comes in, and you have to make adjustments on that.
Jump in for a second. Does the city have cash on hand?
Yes, but that was also an issue at the beginning of the year because of the fact that we were using money to pay off FEMA projects that was limiting cash, and now that cash flow is better.
So what does the law say about the city and cash on hand or general reserve, however you phrase that?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a law per se. There's two things. One, we have to keep a minimum amount in a rainy day fund for a true emergency, for example, if a hurricane hits. And I think it's going to be this year about $37 million in that fund. Mm-hmm. And then what they say is sort of best general practices is to have about 2 months of general fund money on hand, which would be about $150 million.
All right. So let me ask you this real quick before we run out of time. We got 90 seconds left. Where's the $65 million going to come from? And does that mean cuts to services, or what's the rest of 2025 look like? And what about 2026?
Yeah, well, you're asking the right question. I think the issue right now is we don't have a common set of facts, which is creating a lot of the confusion. And I spoke with Councilmember Moreno about this recently, and we're going to ask the legislative auditor to come in to look at everything, just as we've done with vendor payments and the sheriff. So that way, to your point, we know what's going on this year, and we're on a good path for the future.
Even with the $65 million deficit?
It's the $65 million may actually be what goes into the fund balance. I'm happy to come back next week and explain all of that.
Do that, please.
No,
you can't. Do that, please. Come back, because it's important stuff. It really is. And that's why I wanted to go into, hope I didn't spend too much time talking about the process, because it doesn't just happen and people need to understand. Like, for example, the best practice is 2 months. That's what they say for all of us with our personal finances. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. We come back. Arthur Hardy is retiring, in case you've not heard. When we come back, we're going to talk to Arthur Hardy and get his story. From when he was a little bitty boy all the way until now on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.